and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you, self-righteous and self-defeating people. If there are any of you out there, I've been noticing that lately, Riley, that some people who are completely self-righteous are completely self-defeating. It's this weird little self-canceling equation walking down the street. It's like, hey, that sucks, and me too. What am I going to do? Oh, no.
Really? Is that bad?
Well, it's not. I'm being poetic about it. How you doing, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great, man. I was taught never to give up.
Never to give up?
Never to give up, never to admit defeat, never to...
Who were you taught that by?
Everybody in my experience.
Really, but wait a minute. Is this a personal thing?
Of course.
Okay, it's a personal thing. What I'm saying is there's a lot of... I wish we could all get on the same page, man. Sometimes I just wish we could all get on the same page. I got a piece of mail today with a little brochure, which was basically it was like Animal Auschwitz. All right, you see, I get these... I start talking about being a vegetarian, and someone decides to send me another pamphlet of, you know, chickens in captivity and pigs in captivity and cows, you know, bloated dead cows laying in pens, not cleaned out, you know, chickens with weird growths on their head. And I'm like, I get it. I'm not eating it. They know I'm not eating it, so why don't they just, you know, lay off? I don't need that in the morning. Do you know what I'm saying, Riley?
Well, I mean...
It's all right. You know,
it bothers you.
I'm all worked up about other things.
It bothers
anyway.
You eating, seeing chicken heads.
No, it's just like you know, I've been doing this no meat thing. I'm pretty comfortable with it. You know, I'm not having that big of a problem occasionally.
Well, Chris Lopresto hasn't brought the bacon in yet.
Yesterday he brought bacon in, and of course that made me. How can he not want bacon? I imagine most good vegetarians, even the ones out there who've been vegetarians for a year or for years, get a whiff of that bacon and so like, oh, wow. But I can appreciate that. I think the real problem is that I've also gotten, you know how crazy I was about Splenda? I don't believe, you know, everything. But when people forward me information that I think is legitimate, I do a little research, I started to worry about my kidneys.
Splenda hurts your kidneys?
Who the hell knows? Apparently, rats have kidney problems. You give them too much Splenda, but you give rats too much of anything, something's going to happen. You give, if you give a rat the equivalent of 500 Splenda packs a day, of course he's going to probably show some sign of a physical deterioration of some sort.
I'm surprised he wouldn't hurl.
Yeah, well, it was enough to make me rethink it, so then I got to the root of it, Riley. What the root of it is that everyone said, why don't you just have sugar? And I'm like, yeah, why don't I just have sugar? Why don't I? It's not that many calories. It's not going to hurt me that much. And I could have some sugar in my tea. And then I realized, Mark, you drink like 20 teas a day. So it starts out with one sugar. And then I'm like, it's not quite sweet enough, is it? So now I'm up to two sugars. Now, but every time I have a cup of tea, I got to put three sugars in it. You know what that means, Riley? Listen to the pace of my voice.
But
listen to the intensity that I'm operating at. It's 6:09 in the morning.
I know, but there's a simple solution. Adapt your taste so one is enough.
Dude, do you not understand the personality of the addict? Let me just explain to you.
Believe me, I understand the personality of the addict all too well.
No, you know what I'm saying. Hey, you're right. I can drink it with no sugar. I can drink it with some sugar. I guess I'm a little grumpy today because there was a large... there seemed to be the tryouts for the Cat Olympics at my apartment last night.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell is going on, man, with these three cats. Now they'll wake me up. They have food. They barely let me touch them. One of them's really coming around. There are two of them are really coming around now. The cutest one is really starting to come around. But she scratches on my door, Riley. You know why?
What do they want?
Nothing. They want me to open the door, and then they come in, and they look at me, and then they walk out. They wake me up to do that.
They want to be engaged.
I know. Okay, for a second.
Yeah. They have short attention span.
I know. I can't imagine what it's like with people have kids. I just can't imagine it. I imagine I'll have to.
Oh, let me tell you something. Uh-huh. It's one of the great joys of my life.
Really?
Yeah, the upsides and the downsides.
Yeah, I believe you.
This morning, at 1:30 in the morning, I wake up, and my daughter's crying. In the bedroom.
That sounds like a great thing.
No.
Well, that sounds like one of the upsides.
No, yeah. Well, she's got a cold. She can't sleep. She's crying.
Uh-huh.
I'm like an hour before I'm supposed to normally
Can you just put a bowl out? And
no, this isn't a cat.
Okay.
You have to get up. You have to talk to her. You talk her back. You talk her back down. She went back to sleep. first, her breathing was real labored, but by the time I left to go to work, her breathing was fine, and I felt good.
Oh, that's sweet.
The deal.
See, you know what my fear is? Is that as much as I love kids for a few days, maybe a couple hours, is that the kid will come in crying and, like, have a cold, and I'll wake up and go, what?
Yeah.
What does it matter now?
That's the first instinct.
But you work against that.
You say, work against. Look, I work. You know why I work against it? Huh. Because my father used to do that exactly that. What?
Oh, no.
What's the problem?
That's
you
good.
Can't straighten it out?
See, that's a beautiful thing you just said. Because my brother's got three kids, and you know he had kids with a vengeance. He was like, I'm going to have kids, and I'm not going to do anything our parents did. I'm not even going to let our dad talk to those kids, you know. He had big plans, you know what I mean? But I think despite what people say, that you can have a family and break those family scripts that were destructive if you have enough self-awareness to do that, to choose against your initial instincts that you admit to yourself are not right because of the way your father treated you, and you make the other choice, and that's a beautiful thing.
Well, the thing is, you know, that was one of the ways that my father dealt with me. It was one of the more unpleasant ways, that and getting beat. But I never really held all of that against him. But, you know, until he died, I used to call my father and ask him for advice, like, once every couple of weeks.
Oh, man,
so.
That is hey. The last thing I would ever do.
No, man, me and my father got to be tight after a while because I started to realize what about him was actually in me.
Right. Well, I started to realize that, too, and then I started to realize, how can I kill this?
Were some parts of it I wanted to kill.
How can I get this out of me? You too, Opresso? Kalo, the Costco hoe, piping in on the daddy issues.
Uh-oh, he knows.
Hey, look at that. It's men talking about daddy issues. Now, your dad, what, was he a pain in the ass?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, he would come home from driving his bus and just take out all his troubles on me and my mom.
Oh, awful. I really believe that on some level, a father, any father and son relationship is some sort of battle to the death. I really believe that.
Really?
On a subconscious level, because once they pollute you with their ridiculous way of existence, then you have to grow up with it inside of you, fighting it, so you don't end up being as destructive as they are. That is unless you have a good parent, which, you know, I think is rare. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think it's all that rare, and I came to understand why my father was the way he was. I understood that my father, being born in 1904,
mm-hmm.
grew up during a time when opportunities for black males were severely limited.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in the post office for 40 years and then took another job for 20 years after that. My father worked for 60 years.
Mm.
You have to respect that.
Yeah, see, I don't. My dad did all right. He came from nothing and got scholarships and whatnot and, you know, went to college and medical school and everything else. And it's not like he was physically abusive. And there's just no, it's not a real deep thing. But like you were saying, that there is an awareness of their personality traits that you don't want to replicate. So when they come out of you, you literally have to, like, as soon as I hear the tone or the behavior that I know is negative in him, it's literally I have to go, no, 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 this will not, stop it, stop it. And, you know, when you do that on the train, people are like, what's wrong with that guy?
Yeah. Or is it the train to Brownsville?
Yeah, right.
One or the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I look up and go, I'm dealing with my father. And they're like, okay. Yeah, good.
All right, I'll be getting off at the next stop.
Nah, but, you know, I think I really honestly believe people can change, you know, with the help of your friends alienating you when you start repeating yourself.
Oh, there you go. That'll work.
You know, with the help of my wife saying, you know, you're acting like your father. That is the worst thing. Is that the worst thing they can say? Oh, my God. I know it's a tactic. I used to do it to my ex-wife. But, you know, it's a horrible thing to say because it's like she knows that if they know you well enough, you know, that's exactly what you don't want to become. And they go, you're acting just like your father. You're like, oh, why don't you just smack me? Why don't you hit me with a rock? You know what I mean? How do I get out of this?
I'll tell you, it's interesting for me. My wife never knew my father that well. I mean, I was with her for about a year and a half before my father passed. And she talked to him a couple times, met him a couple times, but never got into him deeply enough to say, I'm replicating. I think she understands that a lot of my behavior replicates my father just because he's my dad.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you, I have a deep love and respect for both. They're not here, either one of them.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, you miss them more when they're not here. But bottom line, I have a great deal of respect and love for what both my parents gave everybody in my family. Because I talk to somebody in my family every day.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna have to say something nice so I don't look like an evil.
Oh no!
To be honest,
I didn't say that so you had to say something.
No, but you know what I mean. It was a respectful thing to say. And in all honesty, I've gotten over most of the anger that I have towards my father. All right, and there, you know, what's up, Kayla?
No, me too. But I still.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it long enough, it's still.
I hate him.
I know exactly. It's like, you know what? I see him. It's like, it's nice now. He's old, and you know, I've found what's good about him. My mother, on the other hand, I haven't even begun to reckon with that thing.
No,
it's all good. You know, I'm going to cry. It's 60 minutes the hour. We'll be back in a second.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're talking about daddy issues, it seems. It's morning sedition on Air America. I just want to say that I love my father, I love my mother, and it took a long time to do that. And as I said, I believe that and Chris Lopresto, I got a witness with the sort of bearing the brunt of your father's bad behavior in your own soul. And then I said that I think all father and son relationships are like a battle to the death. And then Clutch Larson, our resident Pinker protege. Is that the right word? Yeah, protege. Yeah. He said that it's genetic. That it's actually genetic. Explain it to me, Larson. I need a genetic rationalization for my feelings of aggression towards my father.
Well, the idea is if you look at siblings,
yeah,
they're in competition with each other for the resources of the world, and the younger they are, those resources are the time, the attention, the physical resources of their parents.
I got to apologize to my brother.
Creatures, whether it's human or not, they evolve to compete for their parents' resources and time.
Right.
And who's the main entity that you're going to compete with for those things? The parents themselves.
Right.
The parents have their own survival reasons for wanting to use their, you know, their food, their time, their energy on themselves.
Right.
Well, the kid needs those too. So you have set up there a genetic basis for struggle.
So you're saying that once you learn how to, you know, get your own stuff, you might as well get your parents out of the way?
Put them on the ice floe.
You mean eat them?
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I wasn't thinking along those lines.
Well, you start off as a parasite.
We do? I guess so.
Very literally.
But apparently, you know, as time goes on, it's not legal to continue that, you know, without being... Well, I guess it is kind of. But not in the same way. You
not
know,
yeah. not from physical. Inside their body eating their nutrients.
No. Or eating... You know, this has gotten very morbid. But
okay. So in other words, Pinker must not have had much of an extended family, huh?
That's not fair. He's just studying how humans how animals work.
But if you have other people that are a part of your life that also can take up to, I had aunts and uncles and cousins,
mm-hmm.
so that my parents were never really focused on having us compete for time and attention with them. We always had other people.
That's true. Well,
had other people. I had an older brother that was 16 years older than me. And he acted as a surrogate parent. He gave us time and attention.
But we didn't demand that of our parents. But you had the genetic survival
of time and attention?
Yeah.
You didn't demand time and attention of your parents?
When I demanded that my mother drive me to basketball practice, she said, walk. I walked.
Simple as that. You demanded. You just didn't get.
I didn't get.
Yeah.
You know, and I got used to not getting, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Now, what people would say, I think, is that you've been extinct.
We're having a breakthrough with Mark Riley.
Yeah. I have no aggression or anger about it, though. No, that was
really.
I was 12. You resolved that stuff when you were a kid. There came a point in my life when I realized that my family was more important than any beef within my family.
Okay.
That was the end of that.
I think we should take calls from all the people out there who agree with the idea that you resolve all your parental issues by the time you're 12.
Wow.
Yeah. I resolved mine.
I'm getting a lot of calls.
I am late.
Give out the number.
I'm really late on resolving some of those things. I've gotten a lot better with it. But I think what Riley's talking about is the survival of the genetic line of the group also becomes an issue after you deal with the resolve those survival issues within your immediate family.
Sure.
So his argument makes sense as well.
Sure.
So okay. So what do I got to do? Got to apologize to my brother, and I got to say that I'm sorry I won. But he's got three kids. What do I got? You know what I mean? I got three cats, and they're not going to carry on the family line. As a matter of fact, those cats would definitely eat me if I dropped dead, you know, given a certain amount of time.
They might not even wait.
That's why they're
looks sluggish.
Yeah. He's going down. I've got to tell my father that whatever aggression we have with each other is genetic, and we can both rationalize it.
Yes.
And then I've got to tell my mother I apologize for feeding off of you when I was younger, and I hope that we can be friends now. Is that it?
Well, Maren, you're the older brother, so you'll win anytime. Like, the parents will just forgive you anyway. The younger brother, like, that's a whole other chore.
Oh, what's the matter, Chris?
Uh-oh.
See? You're just going to pick on the younger brother, aren't you?
Oh, Lord.
Were you a younger brother, man?
Of course.
That's okay, man.
Are you still?
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Hey, buddy, can you go get me the...
I hate older brothers.
You do?
Yeah. They're just... I hate them.
Wait, are they the guys that came in when you were trying to talk to a girl and go, what are you talking to him for?
Dude, it happened all the time. I'm 3 years... younger than my brother, and I'd be in high school when I was a freshman. He'd be a senior, and I'd be talking to a girl, and he'd just be like, hey, what's going on, everybody?
Yeah.
And just ruin my mojo. And
just the tone of his voice made you just shrivel up into a little, like, sort of like, oh, no, he's here.
And then I regress into the little brother, and, like, I'm just useless at that point.
My brother frightens me now. Because...
Why?
Well, first of all, he's like 3 or 4 inches taller than me. He's bigger than I am.
Good.
He's more athletic. You know, and at some point, you know, because I'm irritating and I can be pretty aggressive and intense. At some point, he just said, you know what, man, I could kick your ass. and he had that look in his eye where I'm like, yeah, you know.
Maybe wait, you guys never fought as kids?
What, are you kidding me?
Yeah, no.
I used to. No, of course I did. I stabbed him in the back with a pencil once.
Oh. So you were physically superior at one point, and then he surpassed you.
Exactly.
Oof. Oh,
no,
I can't wait for that.
I hate to break to you, Chris. I don't think there's another growth spurt coming. So. I think you have to wait a long time.
You may have to live with what you got.
My brother will have to regress somehow.
When we come back, we're going to talk about covert propaganda from the Bush administration and how it's infiltrating the world with the permission of news producers across this country.
Producers, directors, anchors, you name it, they're bending over for it. And we'll talk about it here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
This morning's edition on Air America. We got sort of off on a tangent about our fathers before, and I just sent my brother. I just want to apologize for stabbing you in the back with a pencil when I was 8 and you were 6. I apologize. I really do. He was running up the stairs. It was not a recent thing, but I just want to put that out there. President Bush, longtime advisor Karen Hears, has been picked to improve America's standing abroad, particularly among Muslims. And oddly, in a burqa, Ramon came and delivered the Palm Pilot. 7 a.m., it's Karen Hughes. 7 a.m., wake up in some horrid Muslim country someplace. Spend all morning complaining that nothing in this hotel is as good as in the United States. 9 a.m., arrive at work. Well, at least I don't have to spend half the day spinning Bush's drunken driving record. They don't even have cars here. 9:15, spend half the day spinning Bush's drunken war record. Feels strangely familiar. Noon, lunch. If I have any more falafel and hummus, I'm going to spit. Loudly asked Muslim host if there's any place in this turkey town where a person could get some decent pork ribs. 2 p.m. Walk around in Iraqi Market Square loudly saying, isn't it great that you can finally sell your shattered and charred possessions in an open free market system? 6 p.m. Hold press conference. Rename invasion of Iraq. Call it the No Muslim Left Behind Act. Hardcore. All right,
hardcore.
So let's get into this. First, I want to read the appropriate section of Lawrence W. Britt's Fascism, 14 Characteristics of Fascism, relying to, what is it, what am I trying to say? Applying to the media, controlled mass media under some of the regimes, and he's primarily referring to the Italian and German models, the mass media were under strict direct control and could be relied upon never to stray from the party line. Other regimes, like the one we have, exercised more subtle power to ensure media orthodoxy. Methods included the control of licensing and access to resources, economic pressure, appeals to patriotism, and implied threats. The leaders of the mass media were often politically compatible with the power elite. The result was usually success in keeping the general public unaware of the regime's excesses. Now, Mark, we are going to get into this story about, you know, these prepackaged covert propaganda news stories that come out of 20 different federal agencies. I have actually been involved in producing hundreds of fake TV news segments.
Yes.
That are distributed through something that looks almost like a video version of the AP Wire. Is that what it is?
There are several different ones, actually several competing ones. But, Mark, let's start from the beginning here.
Okay.
All of these television stations are licensed to operate in the public interest. You then have to ask yourself, is the distribution of government propaganda in fact in the public interest? I say, no, it's not. Therefore, from where I sit, these stations that knowingly transmit this stuff, and some of these people, by the way, act as though they don't in fact know that this stuff is government propaganda. 20 different agencies, everybody from the Census Bureau to the State Department to the Agriculture Department, all these different people, and let's explain exactly what they're doing.
Okay, but first, it's also against the law, right, Riley?
It is technically against the law, yes.
So they're kind of trying to circumvent a law, which we're going to get to. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it also ought to be in violation of FCC regulations in order to do this. And there might be some people that might want to challenge stations' licenses for knowingly airing this kind of stuff. Although all of these, you know, many of the news directors in this story, which was on the front page of the Sunday New York Times, act as though they had no clue that this stuff was actually government reports.
Let's follow through from how it works. Let's take one example. Like, I guess the big example that was pretty good that was a while back was the Medicare, right? The Medicare reform news segment, the video news segment that went out to a certain number of markets, right?
Yeah, and there were not just Medicaid and Medicare, but this one woman, Karen Ryan, who has a background in journalism. She worked at ABC. She worked at PBS. She ended up becoming a public relations consultant. That was probably her first mistake. She worked for the Health Department, Health and Human Services, I should say, the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And she was the one that did the segment touting the prescription drug benefits for Medicare patients. And once she was outed, the reaction was very, very harsh. And it turned out she had done literally dozens of these kinds of reports where she said, made it look like a conventional news report, but there was no footage from critics of government policy, no one who opposed the prescription drug benefit for Medicare, only touting how great this particular benefit was.
So it wasn't news reporting. What it was a woman who probably had gotten into the business to be a reporter, you know, had sort of, you know, bottomed out on whatever level and decided, hell, I'm going to get a job for this PR company and we're going to present these videos. We're going to make these videos. See, these people, so much of it, as insidious as the government is in distributing these videos and knowing full well that they're going to get on the air in most places, a lot of the people that are involved with it just think like, hey, it's just my job. It's just PR. And the program directors say, well, we got airtime to fill, so we might as well fill it with this stuff. It looks good enough.
But you know what?
Change the ending.
Before we went on the air, what did you say about all that? No sale!
Right.
You can't sell the idea that these people are ignorant. This woman, Karen Ryan, signed it out. Mark Maron, if I did a news report and I said, in New York, I'm Mark Riley reporting, what would you think?
That you were Mark Riley reporting.
Yeah, and that I was doing a straight news report.
Right.
Well, that's how Karen Ryan slugged off her government propaganda in the name of news.
And like, and the programmers that put this stuff on, Riley, I mean, these local programmers, I mean, they are, this is not, it's not just an oversight. I mean, they should be fired. Don't they have a responsibility? Or some of them, I imagine, are on the ideological take, like Sinclair Broadcasting. There are certain, you know, groups of stations that obviously don't have any problem showing government propaganda. But in the name of reporting and a free press, which barely exists anymore, half out of ideological bullying and the other half out of just pure complacency and laziness.
Well, I mean, if Sinclair Broadcasting, 62 whatever it is, television stations, were the extent of this problem, it would be easily dealt with. The fact is that these different organizations, for example, Media Link Worldwide, this is an industry, this is a business that puts out these kinds of video reports. They've got 200 employees. They distribute 1,000 video news releases a year. Most of them are commissioned by major corporations, you know, people that are trying to sell whatever. But they distribute these news releases through, for example, Fox News and its video feed service, Fox News Edge. CNN distributes releases to 750 stations through a similar feed service. So you have all of these different services that may get this stuff, churn it around, and, you know, if you listen to the local news people, they get the stuff, they think it's from the networks.
And they're manufacturing a reality that doesn't exist. See, they know that most people, obviously program directors, station owners, either through, you know, complacency or just laziness or actually ideological commitment to the cause, will put this stuff on. And most people at home, when they see the format, will accept it as news. I mean, Christ, I mean, half the people in this country accept Fox News as news. My father used to watch Fox News and go, I don't know, it seems reasonable to me, because they don't have the censors to gauge what true report is. That one-sided, propagandistic information feels like news to some people because it satisfies their cravings for closure, whereas reporting should actually present an issue in a way that would have to, you know, you would have to think about it for a second.
Okay, let's say for the sake of argument, the public is ignorant about that. The news directors and the reporters that do this stuff know better. They all know better. And their conduct in all this is shameful.
Right.
The idea that these people would sit there with a straight face and tell the New York Times, well, I didn't know. That's absurd. If you see a news report and it does not present any opposing viewpoint whatsoever, you know, so-and-so was asked to comment. So-and-so said, well, that thing that I just presented may have had some problems with it. What world do these people live in?
Well, they obviously have no barometer for journalistic integrity either, and they're lazy, and they're just, they don't have reporters, enough reporters to send out and do things other than fires and pet stories, which they think will get people to watch their news, and which does get people to watch their news. So they figure, as far as the national stuff goes, we haven't got anybody in Washington. Let's just run this thing that we got through the service.
All right, then let's go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Does that serve the public interest if what they're running is government propaganda?
No,
the answer
does,
remains no.
It serves the government's interest to make people complacent, to make the masses uninformed, to make them feel comfort in a reality that doesn't exist, and to make them believe in the cause of the government's agenda. And then, you know, if you get enough of that, you know, people will think it's the truth.
Well, this is part of a very large coordinated effort on
huge
the part of this White House. Now, Bush did not invent these kind of video news releases. Let's be clear about that. They happened during the Clinton administration as well. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that people did not place them in the same situations masquerading as news back then, but maybe they did.
But this administration, as we're about to talk about, has a very effective propaganda arm, a highly organized one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, it is extremely highly organized, and it is focused around specific issues. They have gotten an entire blitz together, including, by the way, calling talk radio stations.
Yeah, let's talk about that when we come back from the break. Before we go to the break, because I think people should hear what they're trying to do with Social Security.
Yeah.
You know, and just the momentum and the organization and the sort of regimen of the, you know, the sort of Ministry of Propaganda, this of the Bush administration, which I think is now, as Chief of Staff, Karl Rove is the guy that is operating a lot of this because now he has time to do this. But the Government Accountability Office has held that Government May's news segments may constitute improper covert propaganda, even if their origin is made clear on the television stations. The point, the office said, is whether viewers know the origin. See, that's the big issue here. And the big issue is a lot of these news reports are being trimmed, they're being cut, they're being, you know, fit into local news broadcasts, you know, on behalf of the program directors who take out the tag.
Yeah.
They take out the tag that this is from the Department of Agriculture, this is from the Department of State, this is from the Department of Defense. They remove the tag to make it seem like their local news guys are putting the stuff on the air. So they're the big criminals here, and they are operating at the, you know, the behest of whatever their personal interest, the station's interest, but whatever. So in this way, they become a sort of middle organization, you know, being a propaganda distributor for the government. The government can claim that, hey, look, we labeled it properly. They're doing that. And you believe me, every time the two of those things get through out of the, you know, 100 or 200 they send out, they're winning.
Of course. And that gets back to plausible deniability. But you've got the Government Accountability Office saying that this sort of thing is illegal, and the Bush administration...
Let's tell them after the break.
Oh, yeah!
And we're going to tell them after the break.
Yeah, we
also
will.
We're going to tell you what the Bush administration is saying to the Government Accountability Office, and we're going to tell you just how organized and how demonic these propaganda brigades are after this on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. We're talking about propaganda. Up, oh, wait, we're going to finish that conversation after I read the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound, which comes to us every day. Thank you, Barbara. Here are your marching orders for today. One, demand to know why baseball players are paying so much for steroids when they can pay half as much in Canada. Two, since Mario Vasquez won't explain why he's quitting American Idol, find a way to blame it somehow on Dick Cheney. Three, have Clinton's lung scar tissue examined by Warren Commission. This can't have been an accident. Four, express solidarity with Hillary Swank after she was caught smuggling an apple and an orange to the New Zealand airport. Hollywood elites must be allowed to bring health food to any formerly oppressed British colony. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Damn right banning gay marriage is unconstitutional. Same-sex marriage is exactly what they had in mind when they wrote the Constitution. Have you ever seen that thing? No straight guy has handwriting like that. You don't think Franklin and Jefferson and Adams had a three-way? What planet are you been living on? Earth to sheeple.
Ooh.
Man, these are heavy today.
I know. Yeah.
Heavy stuff. Hey, all right, first of all, I want to correct myself. Karl Rove, not the chief of staff, deputy chief of staff, assistant to the president, senior blah, 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 and personal advisor to the president, the man who runs the neocon death cult's puppet master. All right, here we go. So we're talking about that. Let's finish this up, Riley. So you were going to say just we were about to say what Bush's reaction to the GAO is. Now, explain to me and explain to the audience, for those of you who aren't sort of like, we know, for those of people who aren't sitting out there going, oh, what you guys don't know is this, and writing an email right now. Tell me what the General Accountability Office is. Tell me who do they answer to, and then tell me what Bush's response about these propaganda videos was.
Okay, the Government Accountability Office is a nonpartisan office. They study various government agencies. They usually deal with waste, fraud.
What did I say? Did I say Government Accountability?
Thought you said Government Accountability. Yeah, it's the GAO.
Okay.
It used to be called the Government Accounting Office.
Right.
It used to be much simpler, but now they call it the Government Accountability Office.
They're a committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now, this office says that it is illegal for agencies, all 20 of them in the federal government, to feed these television stations prepackaged news stories. And by the way, folks, if you think it's only television, think again. And by the way, these are prepackaged news stories that do not disclose the government's role in producing said prepackaged news stories. And we've seen from this article in the New York Times that there are a myriad of stations and government agencies that play fast and loose with the truth about disclosing exactly what is done by the government, what is government propaganda on their airwaves.
Sure. Okay. Now, you know, now in talking about that, apparently now 527s are which is, you know, money that can be given from what, private corporations, private donors.
Yes.
There was a limit to how much of that could be used in political campaigns, but now that the campaigns are over, they can be used as much as they want, and they create these front organizations that produce and distribute, you know, this propaganda information.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. Now, remember that if you want probably the best known 527 was the organization, the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth.
Right.
They were a 527, put that in context.
We have an ad that they put out from, you know, against the AARP that we'll play after the break, you know, maybe because some people haven't heard it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's happening now is that there have been a couple of these 527s that have gotten on board with the Bush administration. But in response to what you're talking about in terms of the Bush administration's response to the Government Accountability Office opinion,
yes,
they say later for the opinion.
Right.
They say what they're doing is perfectly legal. Here is a quote from the legal counsel's office. The legal counsel's office, quote, does not agree with the GAO that the covert propaganda prohibition applies simply because an agency's role in producing and disseminating information is undisclosed or covert, regardless of whether the content of the message is propaganda. In other words, it can be propaganda, but it is not prohibited. Our view is that the prohibition does not apply where there is no advocacy of a particular viewpoint, and therefore it does not apply to the legitimate provision of information concerning the programs administered by an agency.
Mm.
That's bureaucratic doublespeak for later for the GAO. We're going to keep producing these things.
Yeah, and as long as we label it as being from our department or a department within the government, we've done our part. What happens to it once it leaves this office really isn't our responsibility. So they know, as I said before, that some of these people who run TV stations, local TV stations, programming directors, are either, you know, on board with the cause or too lazy and strapped to understand, you know, what the integrity in reporting really means, or just understaffed and just throwing this stuff on. Either way, the government's propaganda distribution arm wins. And this is a big arm. I mean, this is a big movement. They have regimens out there. A couple of these 527Ks, one is called Coalition for the Modernization and Protection of America's Social Security.
Compass.
Yes, which is a big one. Another one is called this Progress for America. You know, Compass forced the people from Compass made more than 250,000 telephone contacts in 11 targeted districts. The memo details participated in 41 interviews with local media, placed 200 calls to talk radio shows, mobilized 3,100 advocates to attend town hall meetings with members of Congress, drove attendance at 50 town hall meetings, and placed opinion pieces in the newspapers of 10 local markets. And we're sitting at home reading George Lakoff's book.
Yep, and you know what's happening? As Bush went out into those different states to push Social Security, this whole operation went right along with them. The phone calls were made, the opinion pieces were placed, the calls to talk radio stations were made, so that it seemed like there was this whole blitz of favorable publicity above Bush's privatization scheme that accompanied his trips.
And we're sitting at home writing an email about how Mark and I missed a nuance in our description of why Social Security is wrong.
Yeah. Get with it, sheepo.
I wish we knew. You know, how are we going to, like, wrangle everybody onto even roughly the same page when there's problems with the salmon in Oregon?
Well, let's hope we're all reading the same book, if not on the same page.
We'll play you that ad when we come back that the Swift Boat guys made against AARP.
That's right.
And we're going to take DeLay apart.
We'll take him apart. Peace by bug-killing peace when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason with reason. This is Air America Radio.
Do you know? Six past the hour, Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio. Folks, I'll be on Randy Rhodes this afternoon with Lewis Black for a few hours, and Janine's going to come in and hang out with Lewis, so stay tuned for that. Also, Morning Sedition has been nominated for 3 March of Dimes Achievement and Radio Awards here in New York. Best news interview for Mark and I's interview with USMC, United States Marine Corps Staff Sergeant Jim Massey.
Oh, wow.
Best entertainment interview for our interview with Will Ferrell. And best parody or song for Survivor, the Bush Cabinet. That one's going to be rough. We're up against WHTZ, Somebody Farted. So,
ooh, tough competition.
So, hopefully. But, you know, it's nice to be nominated. I'll be performing at Cops Comedy Club in San Francisco on Friday and Saturday, April 1st and 2nd. So all you folks out there listening to 960 AM, The Quake in San Francisco, come on down. Check us out. Lawton Smalls is on vacation this week, so we're letting you vote for your favorite Planet Bush reports at MorningsEdition.com. And we're playing the winners as they reveal themselves. Go to MorningsEdition.com right now to vote and stay tuned to hear the first winner. Now, Mark and I, in the last hour, aside from talking about our fathers, talked a lot about propaganda within the Bush administration. Over the past 4 years, at least 20 different federal agencies have been involved in producing hundreds of fake TV news segments. Many were subsequently broadcast on local stations across the country and in some cases around the world without any acknowledgement of the government's role in their production, according to the New York Times. This is. Since President Bush took office in 2001, the White House has spent at least $250 million on fake news segments and other public relations schemes.
And we didn't get a dime, man.
That's nothing. Many reports reached tens of millions of viewers. One video news release distributed by the Office of National Drug Control Policy was shown on 300 stations and reached 22 million households. The State Department has produced 59 video releases heralding success in Iraq and Afghanistan, which were widely distributed in the U.S. and around the world. When George W. Bush explained to reporters in January why his administration would no longer pay pundits to support his policies, he said, there needs to be, quote, there needs to be a nice independent relationship between the White House and the press. Exactly. And subsequently, Riley, this is the mind-blowing thing. Since 1998, many federal departments have been reducing the amount of information they release to the public. So they're shutting down the access to private to the public records of what goes on in the government as they increase the amount of government-supported propaganda that goes out. They are shifting the reality very deliberately from truth to the fiction that they want people to believe. And it's like it's being led. It's right here.
It's insane.
Right here.
It is insane what they're doing. And they are doing it, Mark, because people are not paying close attention.
They don't
care. Well, but see, they care because they want to be able to influence people's hearts and minds without any interference from nasty little people like the opposition.
Now, there's a Freedom of Information Act, okay? There's the Sunshine Law, and it's supposed to, that the government is supposed to share its records with the public, though it may withhold material for national security reasons or to protect the privacy of individuals or businesses. Now, in this new era of state-sponsored fear, you know, with the Patriot Act and with the, you know, never-ending threat of terrorism being reinforced through propaganda in this country, I mean, the amount of information being shut down to people is extreme, and it's growing exponentially. And the ironic thing and the horrible thing about this is this, as more of this, as we said before, with these 527 groups, Americans for Progress and the Compass group on Social Security, so much fiction is being put out there by the government, and they're washing their hands of it because they say they've done their part by labeling it properly, and news outlets are putting it on because of irresponsibility or alignment with the government, or just because it's easier. You know, now right here it says requests for public records have been on the rise and jumped by another 1 million after this. Oh, wait, am I reading the right thing here?
No, you are. After September 11th attacks. But what's incredible about what you're reading, Mark, is that half of this increase was due to a huge spike in the number of requests received by the Social Security Administration.
Right. So people are concerned about what it means with this Social Security pitch that's being put out there. They want to know the truth. And also there's been an increase in Veterans Administration records, because people want to know about that type of stuff, how it affects their lives, how veterans are being treated. But the total number of requests being granted in full, though it's increased 66%, almost all of the requests came from Social Security and veterans.
Social Security and veterans, yeah.
And the percentage of requested information that is eventually released in full has been declining since 1998 at Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, Education, Interior, State, Transportation, and Treasury departments. The Justice Department began reducing the information releases in full after the 2001 attacks. So more propaganda, less truth.
And it goes across government agencies. The number of stores and restaurants that have received recalled meat suppressed by one agency of government. The names of detainees held by the U.S. overseas suppressed by another agency of government. Details about Dick Cheney's Energy Policy Task Force back in 01. Again, kept from from the American people by yet another government.
And something
agency.
Like the meat thing is like, you know, that doesn't become a story until hundreds of people get sick or thousands of people get sick or thousands of people die. I mean, these people are just protecting business interests at the cost of you.
Yeah, and what they're also doing at the same time is substituting real news with fake news, and then by suppressing information at the same time they do this, they really narrow a great deal people's access to accurate information.
And it has an impact. Look, you know, the guys at the fish store across from me, at Marino's Brothers Fish, are now listening to the show.
Right,
now,
right, these, Marino Brothers.
Yeah, these guys were like, you know, I was nervous that they would hear the show and say, oh, there's one of them, bad damn commie liberal bastard. You know, we'll give them fish. Here, have some of this fish and go in the back. And, you know, but no, one of them said, it sounds good. We got a good momentum, a good flow. And I don't even come from that way of thinking. He says, I come from the other side. And I said, believe me, you know, sometimes, you know, liberals can be a little annoying. And he said, yeah, with the flip-flopping. I'm like, what does that mean? But you see, the thing is that the message gets through if it's simple enough. Like, you know, the problem with liberals isn't flip-flopping. What it is, you know, boutique issues. You know, what it is that we can't get on the same page because we all have our own personal causes. But in that guy's head, something like that, because of repetition, because of propaganda, because of the momentum of the media, stuck. And it's got nothing to do with reality, as does a lot of this stuff, and when it's presented as news, it's even worse. I mean, take for instance this ad put out by the Swift Boat guys about the American Association of Retired People.
The American Association of Retired Persons is opposing President Bush's plans for Social Security. Why would they do that? If you want to know the truth about old people, talk to the people who know them.
Old people are needy. I need a ride. I need a walker. I need something to eat. Could somebody please help me? I'm in the toilet. I can't get out. It's horrendous.
I have to spend 15 minutes helping my mother find her glasses because she forgot where she put them. Just forgot.
Dude, they crap in their pants.
Enough about World War II. I get it. You were there.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to dinner at 4 o'clock, you really don't need more money.
You liberated Auschwitz. You were there. I understand. Can we watch The Apprentice now?
And when they wear those diapers, they can pee right on themselves, too. Just pee.
Brian! My name is Brian! God!
I remember this one time, my uncle, he was on the floor. I thought he was having a heart attack or he was dead or something. Turns out he wasn't. Just on the floor.
Who the hell is Bobby? Nobody knows Bobby!
Dude, they crap their pants.
Old people. They oppose President Bush's plans for Social Security. Isn't it time they died already?
Paid for by Swift Boat veterans for whatever cause is being funded by the right-wing millionaires at the moment.
All right, folks, so that's, you know, that kind of stuff goes, you know, unpunished out there in the world of the media, out there in the great zeitgeist, the collective unconscious, the symbiotic, and I don't know, you know, the consilience of our psychic energies. All, you know what? We're going to talk about Tom DeLay when we come back, because it's high time that the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislating pig pack went down. Don't you think, Riley?
I fully concur.
15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mike Mills from REM, and you are listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yes, you are.
We're going to talk about Tom DeLay in just a second, and we're going to actually, you know, in more than just a second, in a few minutes, actually, about 15 minutes, we're going to have Lou DeBose on, who has written The Hammer, God, Money, and the Rise of the Republican Congress. He is an expert on the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislating pig pack. But right now, I got my dream diary from last night because I got to bring him in once a week to my therapist. Here we go. I've just parked my car at my house in Los Angeles. I go to get out. The doors lock. A voice fills the car. Where are you going, Mark? aren't you forgetting something? It's my wife's iPod that's hooked up to the car stereo. I try to open the doors, fiddle with the lock, pull maniacally on the handle. Sorry, Mark. We machines work together. Didn't you see the Matrix? Then in a whir of white wire, two miniature ninja cobras, the earbuds, hyperspeed snake dance themselves into my ears. There. That's better. Tune out. Time to go shopping, Mark. You need clothes. Now. The car starts itself. I like to drive, Mark. Sit back. Relax. Tune out. We burn rubber and haul down Sunset and hang a hard Louis on La Cienega, then right into the parking lot of the Beverly Centers. Look, I don't need clothes. I've got plenty of clothes, I say. Believe me, you need clothes. You look like you're 50. Time to buy. The doors unlock themselves. No, really, I'm good. Good is relative to how you feel, Mark. How you feel is relative to how you look. How you look is relative to the clothes you wear, to the clothes you buy. Come on, Mark. Buy and be good. Buy and be happy. Buy and be young again, old man. I feel like I'm being dragged from the inside around the Beverly Center. Aldo, Hugo Boss, Dolce & Gabbana, Bloomies, Ralph Lauren Jeans, Club Monaco, Mount Blanc, Crate & Barrel, Williams Sonoma. I bought 8 pairs of shoes, 4 pairs of pants, 2 suits, a shirt Elton John wouldn't wear, bikini briefs, a $200 pen, a laundry basket, a roasting pan, and I got a faux hawk. Feels good, doesn't it? You looked hot in those pants, Mark. Nice. You're a new man. Better. Younger. Part of the now. Tune out. I got home and my wife screamed and almost called the police. We went back and returned everything but the pen. I woke up and my bed was filled with department store credit cards.
Ooh.
Okay, now it's time to hyper-parse, dude. Are you ready for the hyper-parsing of Tom DeLay? Man,
this could take time and cost millions of lives.
I'm going to start by saying that that this guy is the most corrupt representative of any state in my lifetime that I have known or remembered. This guy, it's like, where do you even start, Riley? Let's start with the newest charges, can we?
All right, now, he is the, I was going to say Speaker of the House. He's not Hastert's the Speaker. He's the Majority Leader of the House of Representatives.
Yes, sir.
That means he wields enormous power, and it is Tom DeLay that is charged with keeping the Republican members of the House of Representatives in line. Tom DeLay has an extremely conservative agenda. He has had since he was elected to Congress, I believe back in 1984, somewhere in that general vicinity, and he has been a thorn in the side of people, free-thinking people everywhere, since his entry to Congress.
Can I just say, he's one of these guys, too, if I could quote from my obsessive sort of 14 characteristics of fascism by Lawrence Britt, can I just say that he says in number 8, religion and ruling elite tied together. Unlike communist regimes, the fascist and proto-fascist regimes were never proclaimed as godless by their opponents. In fact, most of the regimes attach themselves to the predominant religion of the country and choose to portray themselves as militant defendants of that religion. The fact that the ruling elite's behavior was incompatible with the precepts of that religion was generally swept under the rug. Propaganda kept up the illusion that the ruling elites were defenders of the faith and opponents of the godless. A perception was manufactured that opposing the power elite was tantamount to an attack on religion. This guy is one of the great lying Christian fanatics who has never behaved anything like a Christian. This is a guy that has a plaque on his wall behind his desk that says, "This could be the day," you know, in reference to the rapture, all right? This is also the same guy that said, "I am the federal government," when he was asked to stop smoking a cigar in public. All right, so this is a guy that is a spiritual hypocrite that uses fake Christianity to justify, you know, and cover up his insane, insanely immoral behavior.
Now, what we can do, Mark, to make this simple for our listeners, is to divide Tom DeLay's transgressions in two. One are the admonitions, the transgressions that he has already been publicly admonished for. The other side are current allegations, things that may well get him indicted criminally if the guy down in Texas has his way.
Let's start with those, with the new ones.
With the new ones, okay.
What do you say?
Let's start with an allegation that comes via the New York Times. This is an allegation from them. This is an allegation covered in the Times just last week. This is his Political Action Committee, Texans for a Republican Majority. Trimpac is under criminal investigation for using corporate money to finance Texas campaigns. Now, you cannot do that under Texas law. DREMPAC was set up in 2001. It was instrumental in helping Texas Republicans take control of the legislature, and in turn, they gerrymandered the congressional districts in Texas, ensuring that Republicans from Texas would maintain control of that delegation. He says he only has an advisory capacity at DREMPAC, the former executive director says DeLay had very little to do with day-to-day operations. However, it appears as though he had his finger in that pie a little more than he was prepared to admit. An email exchange from a member of the committee's advisory board notes that a finance committee conference call in October of 2002 was postponed at DeLay's request because of, quote, action on Iraq. Other documents show how DeLay's name was cited by the committee's fundraisers when they were seeking donations. Mm. An email message sent by the former executive director, John Colleandro, in September of 2002 asked that a phone call be made to a prominent Texas lawyer for his help in a fundraising event the following week. Quote, Colleandro says he needs a push. Please tell him how important it is and how important this is to TD. Now, that's not T.D. Jakes of gospel fame. That's Tom DeLay.
Now, when we get Lou DeBose on the phone, all right, this guy knows a lot about DeLay. You seem to think, Riley, rightfully so, that the South Korea trip is the one that's really got the teeth.
That one, to me, is the smoking gun because that's the one. I mean, he can say that he didn't know about the trip to Britain, that the Choctaws and E-Lottery was behind the donation. There's a whole bunch of stuff around that one. The other one, on the other hand, the trip to Korea, that one, which, by the way, cost $106,000, even more than the trip to Britain, that one he had to have known. His boy was one of the co-founders of the organization that paid for the trip.
His,
no way
his
you
aide,
get
Ed
his
Buckham.
Aide. Yeah, Ed Buckham.
Also his pastor. Dig
yeah.
that.
Wow.
So we'll get Lou DeBose on the phone. We're going to ask him all about this stuff, and we'll actually explain it a little more to you as we move through this. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Do you...
Hey, folks, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to get Lou DeBose on the phone to talk about Tom DeLay. But first, I want to say that when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So, as some of you know, we got a brand new iNews 5000 here. It's a Wi-Fi headline translator right here in the studio. So let's crank this baby up. All right, here we go. From the New York Times, California judge voids ban on gay marriage. Stick that into the machine there. California judge voids ban on gay marriage. Translation. Jeb Bush finds first campaign issue for 2008. Aha! Here we go. Signs of anthrax detected at two Pentagon mail facilities. Signs of anthrax detected at two Pentagon mail facilities. Translation, post office take 5 years to deliver two letters. Uh-huh. From the Associated Press. Wedgie added to Webster's Dictionary. How about that? Wedgie added to Webster's Dictionary. Translation, public accepts the word wedgie, but is shocked that Emmanuel Lewis has own dictionary. Come on, come on. Okay, here we go. On the phone from Portland, Oregon, the author of the book, The Hammer, God, Money, and the Rise of the Republican Congress. He's also former editor of Texas Monthly Magazine. He knows these guys. Right, Lou?
I'm afraid so.
Okay.
Good morning.
Lou DeBose is on the phone. Lou, I guess right out of the gate, I got to ask you, does it look good in terms of Tom DeLay going down? Is he finally going to take the hit?
I think the gradual process of the end of Tom DeLay has finally begun. There's only so much scandal that one member of the congressional leadership, believe it or not, can tolerate.
Can we have a scandal summary, Lou?
Which one?
Well, I guess, Mark Riley here seems to think that this South Korean trip's got the most teeth.
Well, it was paid for by an advocacy group. It was illegal. He did it. It wasn't properly reported. He took the money. But, I'm sitting in court in Washington. I mean, in Austin last week, 10 days ago, and an attorney says in open court that Tom DeLay took a $25,000 check from a Reliant Energy lobbyist, not his own, not for his own gain, but money to be spent illegally in Texas.
Yeah.
The lobbyist was a former staffer. Drew Maloney was a former staffer of DeLay's.
Okay.
He's in trouble in Texas. He's in trouble in the Korean front. He took $70,000 of money from American Indian tribes to go golfing in Scotland.
What about this? This is a guy that claims to be some sort of lofty Christian person. This is a guy that has his congressional aide is also his pastor. This guy Buckham, who seems pretty suspect as well. And is this also a guy that tried to take about $500,000 out of a children's charity he set up?
Yeah, that's the most tenuous claim. The children's charity, and in fairness to Tom DeLay, I think he might have some interest in not seeing children harmed. That's the best you can say about him, though. He found Jesus with James Dobson in 1985 in Congress. Oddly enough, James Dobson was working with Ralph Reed in one of the scandals. James Dobson, the Reverend Dobson, almost. He's not quite a reverend, but. And Ralph Reed of the Christian Coalition worked with Tom DeLay associate Jack Abramoff in involving Indian casinos, and they were both and Reed took $4 million of money in a scam involving $82 million, the biggest lobbying scam.
Well, so as Christians, what exactly weren't they exploiting the fact that they are against gambling? So how did that quite work with those guys? I just want to get that out.
Yeah, this one is a little bit complex. Jack Abramoff is probably going to be indicted, as is Mike Scanlon, for taking $82 million from these six American Indian tribes by selling Tom DeLay's name, by saying, we'll protect your gambling casinos and make sure that they stay open, and when they get closed, we'll reopen them if you'll pay us, because we have access. We got stroke with DeLay. They even brought some of them up to meet with DeLay at one time.
Right.
So they took this money from these Indians. Now, here's the sweetest part of the story. They bring Jack Abramoff into Texas to work with, they bring Ralph Reed, formerly of the Christian Coalition,
right,
bring him into Texas to shut down a casino, quietly working with pastors. The Tigua Indians, once a dirt poor Indian tribe in El Paso, they shut the casinos down with Reed. Then they get on the phone and they call and they promise to reopen the casinos if they'll pay them $20-$25 million in lobbying fees.
Wow.
So the day they shut the casinos down, with Ralph Reed quietly working with pastors, they go to the Tiguas. This was not DeLay, but this is DeLay's closest associate, and they were selling DeLay as their go-to guy in Washington. They gave him Abramoff and Scanlon, his former aides, gave DeLay $30,000-$50,000, and DeLay got a golf trip out of this.
Is that so? They were using moral grounds to shut the casino down, but it was an extortion game some level.
Sounds like a shakedown to me.
It was a shakedown the sweetest story is when the Tiguas finally couldn't open the casino. Abramoff went to them, and they were out of money for lobbying. Abramoff goes to them and says, why don't you let me buy term life policies on your tribal elders, and I'll collect them as they die,
wow,
and then I won't pay you, you don't have to pay any lobbying fees. Just let these dying old men and women pay the lobbying fees.
Wow,
Lou, I got to ask you, I mean, we've seen critical mass take down other congressional heavyweights before. We've seen it happen with Newt Gingrich. We've seen it happen going back to Dan Rostenkowski, for God's sake.
Right.
When do you think, are we at critical mass with DeLay yet? I mean, you've got, for example, two members of the House Ethics Committee who have contributed to the man's defense fund, for God's sake.
Right.
When do we get to the point where he becomes more of a liability than an asset?
Well, and make it clear, Mark, that those are two new members, because the old members reprimanded him three times last session. So they restacked the deck and put two members on. One of them is Lamar Smith, who gave DeLay $10,000, and who hosted a funder for DeLay's Texas PAC, for which DeLay himself might be indicted in April for raising illegal money in Texas, and for which two of his three of his closest associates are now facing indicted in Texas. So, you know, I think this is a process that's 3 to 4 months. You know, ultimately someone in the Republican House conference is going to say the guy is damaged goods and he's tainting all of us. You know, he's facing a long season of litigation in Texas. Jack Abramoff is being investigated by, and Mike Scanlon are being investigated by Senate Indian Affairs Chair John McCain. DeLay's, you know, he's now got this Korean trip that he took. He's got a $70,000 trip to play golf. It just goes on and on.
Tell me a little bit about his wingman, this guy Buckham.
Ed Buckham, the Reverend Buckham.
Yes, of course.
You know, I mean, he's like every other Tom DeLay associate. Tom DeLay's office is the quickest trip to an e-ticket in the lobby. You know, and Ed Buckham, they sat down, Tom DeLay and Ed Buckham and Ken Lay of Enron sat down in DeLay's Sugar Land House on the edge of a golf course, or the front of a golf course in Texas, and they cooked up a $750,000 lobbying scheme for Buckham involving Enron. You know, he's DeLay's go-to guy for God and money, and always has been. And was when he was DeLay's staffer, he was DeLay's pastor. But the two of them sat down in a restaurant in Washington and cooked up a scheme for making money on Enron.
But Lou, you know, as you're saying this to us, it strikes me that, I mean, these are social conservatives. Ralph Reed, Dobson, Buckham, all these are social conservatives, people that are against gambling, supposedly against corruption, on moral grounds.
Hypocrites.
How do they get away with this?
I wouldn't go there because that's between them and their maker. I mean, these guys are giving corruption a bad name in the state of Texas, and that's hard to do, and Louisiana.
But you can rest assured that they are Christian people.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tom DeLay is very sincerely a Christian. He prays.
Okay.
And he prays with an EY also, he's a predatory fundraiser also.
Yeah. They don't cancel each other out. Maybe that's the yin and the yang of Tom DeLay.
Yeah, right. Lou, let's say for the sake of argument that DeLay gets indicted or he does in fact go down. What does this do in your judgment to the overall Bush agenda? DeLay has been a key player in promoting that agenda. What happens if he goes?
You know, that's a great question because not only the Bush agenda but the Republican Congress, it will create a leadership vacuum in the Republican Congress the likes of which has never been seen because DeLay runs the Congress and that will hurt Bush's agenda. You know, DeLay is when Bush wanted a prescription drug bill for senior citizens, it was DeLay who made it happen by extending a vote from it was supposed to be 15 minutes to 3 hours. The vote ended at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they shut the cameras off on the C-SPAN cameras off on so that they had them only sweep the Democrat side, so that they couldn't see what was happening on the Republican side. I think it hurts. It's a liability for Bush, and you know he's a liability for the Republican Party also. But I think it really hurts the Bush agenda because DeLay he appointed Hastert Speaker. You know when Bob Livingston went down after Gingrich went down. I guess went down is not the phrase you should use.
So Lou DeBose, we're gonna take a break here, and I want to know. Did I just cut you off in the middle of that?
I can rant for a long time.
But I want to take a break, and I also want to ask you if you're a gambling man. I want you to give us odds. I want you to give us on, you know, how long is it going to take before DeLay's deputies are you know going to stop? They're not going to be willing to take the heat for him anymore, and they're going to be willing to cut a deal. I want you to give me a rough estimate in months here, and when we come back from the break, is that all right?
I'll call one of the casinos and get the betting line.
There you go.
All right, we're talking to Lou DeBose. We'll be back with him after the break. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Cholesterol. 8:50 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Yep.
We're talking to the author of The Hammer, God, Money, and the Rise of the Republican Congress about the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay. Lou DeBose, give me an outside. What do you think? How many months before he goes down?
I'm guessing 6 months. I mean, the guy had five headlines of the Washington Post last week. The only good one was Tom DeLay treated for a heart arrhythmia.
And like one of his anonymous friends or coworkers or a consultant, an anonymous Republican consultant said, quote, if death comes from 1,000 cuts, Tom DeLay is into a couple of hundred and it's getting up there. The situation is negatively fluid right now for the guy. You start hitting arteries, it only takes a couple, end quote.
Well, you know, that's interesting because that 100 cuts, 1,000 cuts is, you know, when I interviewed Tony Blankley, the Washington Post, Washington Times columnist and talking head, you know, he worked for Gingrich, he said that there was a sense that Newt fell suddenly and precipitously, but he said, but in fact, he had suffered a death from 100 cuts, 1,000 cuts, and he said that, you know, he was worn down by fights within the party and outside the party. Even with DeLay trying prematurely to knock him off in 97, because DeLay wanted the power.
Do you think that there's a lot of people that are gunning for DeLay's head or are trying to? I mean, if you were to speculate, who do you think is going to sell him out?
Well, the first person to speak in public was and say he might be interested in leadership was you know Zach Wump of I guess Tennessee or Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
Who is strong of mind and pure of heart, and that was before the House organized and when DeLay was in trouble then. You know, this is going to happen just as it happened to Newt. You know, Dick Armey and Bill Paxson and Tom DeLay secretly met inside without telling anyone else in the caucus and said the guy's damaged goods, we got to get rid of him in 97. They tried to do it in 97 and Newt caught them. All of them, and he destroyed the careers of all of them except our guy Tom DeLay, who, you know, Army left, Paxson left immediately, Army lost his, you know, lost any real power and finally left Congress. Tom DeLay is still there. But you know, how long can this guy go on with before the institutionalists, and there still are some in the Republican Party, as utterly corrupt as it is. It took the Democrats 40 years to get as corrupt as Republicans have gotten in since 95.
But, Lou, can Tom DeLay's way of doing business survive his own political career? Will there be any change in the way the next majority leader does business, or has Tom DeLay created a template that it'll be easy for others to follow?
He has. Until there's a real reform movement, such as the one that the Republicans led against the Democrats in 1994, when they threw the Democrats out, and Rasinkowski went to jail and they passed all these laws, rules such as things saying if you're indicted you can't stand as a member of the leadership, which they tried to rescind to protect DeLay in October and then backed away from it in July because it's likely that he will be indicted in Texas. He has, in a way, an unprecedented way corrupted the Congress.
Wow. So thank you so much, Lou DeBose, and I hope you're right about the ouster of Tom DeLay within 6 months. The book is The Hammer, God, Money, and the Rise of the Republican Congress. You can get it at morningsedition.com at a slight discount. Appreciate you being here with us, Lou.
Thanks, Lou.
Glad to do it again.
Okay, take it easy. Wow. So, you know,
hopefully the next time we have him on, it'll be a post-mortem for Tom DeLay's political career.
No kidding. So, like, he just said that the place is stinking corrupt levels. And that was an amazing quote he said there, that it only took him less than 10 years to be as corrupt as the Democrats took 40 years to do.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, it is part of the process. I mean, what you end up having is the party in power defining the rules of the game. And the Republicans now figure because they're in power, they can define those rules. And DeLay, who obviously has never had any nuance in the way he does his political business, figures that now this is this open season. So he'll go and he'll continue to do what he's been doing until he is stopped. And that's the operative term, until he is stopped.
It's just the religiosity of this whole thing in terms of, like, you know, how I talk about, you know, the way that Christianity or the label of Christianity is misused by people who are clearly antithetical to all things Christian. This is a great example. James Dobson, Ralph Reed, and Tom DeLay, the hypocrisy and
the cynicism,
the extortionary tactics of somebody, of these people who claim to believe in God and be doing God's work, it's horrendous.
Here comes some dirt poor Indians who have been granted a license to open a casino. What are we going to do? We're going to take all their money.
And that's James Dobson people. Ralph Reed, those of you liberal haters who listen to our show and write emails that are condescending and arrogant and self-righteous because you have no ability to see yourself clearly, you are exactly what you accuse us of being, and these are your religious leaders. These are the people that are carrying the torch of religious integrity for some of you, and it's pathetic.
You are being played. In case you don't know it, you are being played.
And thank you, all you liberal Christians who are actually doing and honoring the principles of Christ out there. Appreciate you listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, now, when we come back, we're going to talk about...
Why is A.M. Fumi?
I'm glad you said the name, because I'm accused of forgetting black people's names.
I got your back, man.
That's a tough one. What's your name again? Kwasi Mfume.
Kwasi Mfume.
That's a tough one.
He's got something coming up, and we're going to tell you exactly what it is.
That sounds pretty exciting. We're also going to have that. We're going to do some confessions. So if you guys are ruminating, and this is a deep tease, as they call it in the radio business.
Yeah.
If you've got something stuck in your craw, if you've committed some transgression or sinned against the progressive and liberal values you'll hold near and dear to your heart, and you feel like sharing it and getting it off your chest, you're going to have your opportunity in a little bit.
In a little bit. Were you at a gambling table with Ralph Reed? James Dobson? Whoever? Call us now.
I wish I could get addicted to gambling. I'm just no good
at it. I can't stand it. I don't like
losing money.
I hate Vegas for precisely that reason.
No fun losing money.
No, it's no fun losing money. But we're going to, don't lose any sleep. Stay with us. We are going to come back. We got a lot more for you right here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm a reporter.
Wow, that was weird. That had a double effect to it. I didn't know it would do that.
Whoa.
Oh, now there's a whole new world open to me. It's 6 past the hour. It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. Welcome aboard. Nice to see you, Mark Riley.
Nice to see you, Mark Maron.
Nice to see you, Kalo, the Costco ho. Oh. Good to see you. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to the self-righteous and also those of you who are self-righteous and self-defeating. That's the great liberal combination. It's like, it's wrong. I'm tired of me. But look, folks, what are we doing? I got a couple announcements to make. I'll be on the Randy Rhoads Show this afternoon with Lewis Black, hanging out with Lewis, yelling. We'll both be yelling. We're going to have a yell fest where I'm going to go, I don't know, Lewis, what do you think? He's going to go, I don't know, what do you think? And I'm going to go, I don't know, Lewis, tell me what you think. And then he'll tell me what I think, and I'll tell him what he thinks, and we'll yell some more. So, what else, man? I'll be performing at Cops Comedy Club in San Francisco April 1st and 2nd. If you're listening to 960 AM, The Quake in San Francisco, come on down. Be part of the fun. I believe it will be fun. I'm assuming that. What else do I need to say, Riley, before we get into this? I tell you, we're going to have the liberal confessional here in just a second. And I want you to, if you have something stuck in your craw, if you have a transgression, a sin that you've committed against the progressive values, call us at 866-303-2270. You know what I did last night, Riley?
Tell me.
I went to, it was the night before last, I cooked lentils, okay, in a pot. All right, and I cooked them all. And then, I turned the heat off. So I thought... And I went to the gym, and I went running. And I come back into my building. I'm like, what the hell is that? Something smells. I'm talking in the building. I'm on the first floor. I live on the third. And I'm like, there's got to be a problem. I wonder if there should be should we call a fire truck? And as I'm going upstairs, I'm like, man, is that coming from my apartment? That can't come from my apartment. And I get in there, and I didn't turn the burner off a little bit, so the lentils were sitting there for 2 hours with no liquid in them on the burner. And I opened it up, and the entire room was filled with smoke. And the cats are like, dude, You know, actually, they weren't. I thought they would be, like, more, you know, pissed off. But I walk in, the place is filled with smoke, and the cats are just like, meh, nothing. But
what about your neighbors?
No, of course no one does anything. Remember, a woman sat dead in the apartment next door to mine for 2 weeks, and no one did anything about it. Like, they're going to notice lentils. You know how people are. They're like,
yeah, I know.
Hey, as long as it ain't my place, I guess it's not a problem. It's not in here, is it? No, it's not in here. It's out in the hall somewhere. So, but whatever. So I opened the pan. And, like, the lentils had almost, they'd, like, almost melted, and they'd become, like, this lentil resin. All right, so outside of saying my pan's ruined, there was a part of my brain that was like, I wonder if ancient people used lentil resin. Like someone had to have come upon this. Look how thin, it's like tar, it's like lentil tar. I wonder if I could make arrowheads and then put them onto the end of sticks and seal the string that I tie them to the stick with lentil resin. I wonder if it had a different name in ancient times. And then as I'm sitting there thinking about this, I'm like, what is wrong with you, dude? What is wrong with you? Why would you even waste your time thinking about this? Lentil resin, you know, arrowheads, and I'm sitting there, I'm an idiot. You know, and then I got into the other thing. It's like, why the hell did my smoke alarm work? And what's wrong with these stupid cats that they don't understand that there could be a fire? Anyways, sometimes it's not easy being a liberal, Riley. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn, Riley. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
I've been feeling very unenvironmentally friendly lately because of all the paper we use here at the show. You know, printing out tons of articles for research. Half of them I don't even use. I don't even see them. It's just really wasteful, and I'm sure some of our listeners would be aghast at the amount of it. I mean, I am.
So you feel that the waste of paper goes against the liberal nature of our programming here at Air America?
Yeah, clearly.
Well, if you're so worried about it, are you also diligent about making sure all of the paper gets recycled?
Well, I mean, I assume it gets recycled, right? I mean, there are people here that do that job, probably. I mean, right? You know, pick up the papers?
Yes, there are people who do that job here, recycling all of your papers, a whole team of them. Jonathan, Patchman, Brendan, Chris, myself, and the cleaning woman.
Uh-oh. So you guys think besides being wasteful, I'm also a slob?
Yes!
Oh, hey, what?
And it's not just the paper. The cleaning woman has said she will no longer clean up the popcorn and other food that accumulates on the floor around your desk.
Oh, man. So this isn't so much a confessional. Now it's like a morning sedition intervention, huh? All right. So if I might add, my home is very neat, okay? Okay, outside of the lentil dirty pan. And I'm sorry, what do you want me to do? What if I took the cleaning woman out for an all-expenses-paid druid's retreat where we'd worship the Earth Mother and plant tree saplings in her honor? You know, stuff like that, and I could buy her dinner.
Stop worrying about the trees, Mark. You're a damn slob. Here's your penance. Clean up after yourself. Apologize to the cleaning woman. You see this? It's a recycling bin.
You mean that blue thing I drain my omelet into?
Into?
Okay, on to, around. All right, Brother Riley and everybody else, I'm going to start doing my part around here. But we're going to need an omelet draining bin.
It's called a trash can, Mark. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Well, thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Do you want to take one before the... okay, Gary, what's your sin, Gary?
Well, you're going to love this one. After all this talk about delay, and he is a thoroughly repugnant person, I find myself kind of admiring the guy. He clanks when he walks. I mean, you know.
Yeah, so you think he's got some spunk, some character, some toughness that you find admirable. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, not so much admirable. I don't know if admire is the right word. I mean, you just sort of have to step back and say, "Whoa, boy, this guy's really got something."
Well, you know that's a horrendous transgression, Gary. And then I'm gonna have to tell you to stay on the line while we take a break. And I'm gonna have to call some other liberal clergy to find out what exactly your penance for secretly admiring or at least being impressed with. I think is what you're saying. You're impressed. More than admire.
It's sort of a, you sort of have to sneakily admire and be impressed by the guy because, I mean, you can't believe that anybody can be, well, he's either very stupid or cojones the size of pumpkins.
Right. Well, see, even now you're digging your sin pit even deeper because you're unwilling to let this go.
I heard it.
And you're making it into a male thing on top of everything else.
Well, you stay on the line, Gary, and we're going to come up with a penance for you when we come back. It's Air America Radio. It's 13 past the hour.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow. Yes. Yes. I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah. Drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm...
Eighteen past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
This morning's edition on Air America. We're in the middle of our liberal confessional segment, 866-303-2270, to confess your transgressions or sins against the progressive and liberal values that you hold so dearly. We're on the phone with Gary in North Carolina, who has confessed impressed.
A grudging admiration.
With Tom. It didn't sound very grudging, Gary. Are you still there, buddy? Oh, Gary left. Okay. Well, here's what we're going to do for Gary, because I know he's still listening. His penance is essentially that the reason why most people are, you know, who, like, are antithetical. Like, you know, I am very different than Tom DeLay, but because of his sort of ability to bully without shame, that is impressive to people that have in them the same capacity to bully, yet don't have the nads
to go ahead
and do it without feeling ashamed of themselves, which is properly the right way to feel when you bully someone. I was going to tell Gary that what he would have to do is go out and bully for the left.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Go bully some right wingers, or else, you know, find a young bully and try to get him to change his ways so we don't create another Tom DeLay. All right, so that's my penance for Gary. So, you know, I hope he can pull that off. But I understand where that comes from, is that, you know, when you take the higher road and you see people taking the low road with a certain amount of panache,
yeah,
you know, it's easy to be like sort of like, well, God, why does he get to do that?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's a pretty common human emotion. You watch people, even people who you disagree with about what time of day it is. But if they do it with guts, if they do it with... What is that? A set of brass ones?
Panache.
No regrets. No compunction.
Even though you know it's wrong, you're sort of like, that must feel good to be that much of a douche. All right, Tony in Columbus, what's your sin, Tony?
Oh, boy, this is a big one.
Okay.
I was getting ready to watch Will and Grace the other night, but instead I flipped to Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was being, you know, pushed by ABC.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty ironic, since I support that new gay television network, Q Television.
Yeah.
So I'm watching Billy Graham, and he actually got me to pray to my TV.
Oh, my God. You got sucked in?
I got sucked in. I did everything except send money.
Oh, my God. I guess that your penance will be that you have to watch Will and Grace.
I'll watch
Q
Television when it comes out.
Wait, but it's sort of sad but touching that you got down on your knees and prayed because...
I didn't get down on my knees. I stayed laying down on the couch.
But you did pray?
You prayed
along with Billy Graham?
I prayed along.
Now, do you come from a religious background?
I do. I am Catholic. I was an altar boy, which explains a lot.
Now, did Billy Graham speak of any gay issues while he...
He spoke of selfish hedonism. He spoke of... he also spoke of the Sodom and Gomorrah story, like looking back on sin, you know the story.
Yeah.
All right, so it
was a sin thing, and I thought, you know, I support this gay television network, and I'm an investor of it. What is that a sin?
Are you gay?
No, I'm straight.
Okay, well...
Married with children. I'm just open-minded. I'm originally from California, but live way in the red state of Ohio.
Oh, wow. So what are we going to do for... I was going to say that you need to go out and enjoy a weekend of selfish hedonism. Can you do that with your wife?
You know what? I can try. I get the kids to bed, and I'll do it. I promise I'll get off the couch.
That's not good. That's not too bad of a penance. I'm thinking, you know, it's not a lot of punishment. I don't know what your relationship's like, but...
Yeah, pass on that gay television network, Q Television.
Okay,
it's,
what?
It's, you know,
You think it's going to be do you invest in it because you are an open-minded good guy? Or do
no,
you
he
think
wants to
gonna,
make a profit.
It's going
to
be a winner.
No, I'm investing because I'm open-minded good guy. I've been in it a while, so it's not like I'm looking for a quick buck. I've been there a while.
Now, where I don't even know where that airs. It's called the Q Network?
Yeah, Q Television Network.
I've heard about it.
It's on the air on RCN, which just started on the air a couple months ago. It's actually going to broadcast the gay games in 2006 out of Chicago.
The gay
games?
Unbelievable. Look it up. Q Television, QTelevision.com.
What are some of the events? Yeah.
There are hundreds of events. Just like there's swimming, there's, you know, soccer, there's every event that you have about the Olympics.
But I don't understand, but it's all gay?
Well,
sorry?
You can think about it this way. How many pro athletes have come out while playing pro, while being pro? These people get so much blowback. From being gay while they play in their sport. So this gives them a venue.
Wait, is that a bad thing, blowback?
Yeah, well, if you said that...
Oh, you're going straight to hell for that one, Gary.
All right, guys.
Take it easy, buddy.
Thanks a lot. Lord, I'm not standing anywhere near you for the rest of the day. I feel clouds coming over the Congress building. Remember the iPod was speaking to you earlier?
Yeah.
Somebody should be talking in your head about now.
Why you? Did I say something bad? All right, Daryl, what's your sin, Daryl?
Hi, Daryl.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Well, it's kind of a personal sin. As a good liberal, I usually compost my kitchen waste, you know, the vegetable waste. But, you know, this winter it's been kind of cold and a little too cold to go out to the compost heap. So instead I've been taking all my onion peels and potato peels and coffee grinds and just throwing them out with the regular garbage.
Oh, my God. There is no forgiving you.
An environmental slacker.
No, come on. I think, I don't know. So do you live in the country?
No, I live in the suburbs. I live in Lynbrook.
Okay.
Oh, Long Island. Okay.
So I guess what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to start a new compost heap in your kitchen. Don't be afraid. Just, you know, maybe a box or a pile. And just do it for as long as you can handle the smell, and then you will have paid your penance.
Yeah.
Can I also use some of your lentil paste?
The lentil resin? Yeah, I'll send you over a batch of lentil resin. You can use it to seal almost any crack on any surface.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, take care, Daryl.
Better than crazy glue.
Well, it was just weird because it was one of those moments where you just start to, I don't know, I explained it enough.
Yeah.
The lentil resin. We got enough of that. Who am I talking to now? Kevin, listening in Georgia. What's your sin?
Hi. This is a real bad one.
Yeah.
It is a real bad one.
Oh, come on.
Really bad about
it. No.
I was born and raised in San Francisco.
Okay.
And I am a really good liver. I used to watch it at the Holy City Zoo. You remember? You play there occasionally?
Oh, my God. That's so long ago. Back in the day, it was like dying and only four people would show up. You were like one of the
four. I was one of the four.
Yeah, I remember.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I feel bad.
Okay.
But anyway, when I hear, I really agree with everything Randy Rhoads says.
Yeah.
But her voice is like the mother-in-law I never wanted to have.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And I can't stand it.
So,
the only one worse than that is Lynn Samuels over on the Sirius Left. You ever hear her?
Oh, yeah, I know Lynn from way back.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And here I feel so guilty because I agree with her. I don't know if it's misogyny or it's the shrew. It's this. Kind of thing that just drives me back.
Wait a minute now. You're talking bad about...
I've been so happy. Here's how guilty I am.
Yeah.
She's been in the hospital. I've been happy.
Oh, my God.
I've been listening to other people who I like, Sam Seed or you, whoever shows up.
Right.
I prefer.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't agree with...
Okay, I hear what you're saying. So
it's horrible.
You feel guilty for not being able to stand Randy Rhoads' voice. All right, well, here, let's take it down a notch, and here's your penance. You have to listen to Franken.
I listen to him every day.
Okay.
That's why I think it's misogynistic. That's what makes me feel guilty.
Oh, sorry.
If it's a guy doing it, it doesn't bother me so much.
Okay, all right,
wow.
I get it. So what are we going to, what's his penance? What does he have to do?
Wow.
How about listening to that? Why don't you listen to Michael Savage for a couple hours?
Oh, God.
Yeah, what? Why'd you, no, listen.
I gotta carry the sin.
No, listen to Dr. Laura, or whatever her name is.
Oh.
Is
that,
Yeah, listen to her for an hour and then come back. And I know you can you can't help yourself. You got to listen to Randy. I can hear it in your voice. As much as you hate it, you love it. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for calling. We got Planet Bush coming up after this. You picked it, so get ready to listen to it. It's 27 past the hour here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning Sedition is the program. The network is Air America Radio. As a lot of you know, our regular listeners, Lawton Smalls, is taking a vacation. So we're revisiting some of Lawton's most respected reports from Planet Bush. Our listeners have voted for their favorites on morningsedition.com. And right now, we present the first selection of your favorite Planet Bush report with Lawton Smalls. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in this alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. And once again, joining us now on the phone from Planet Bush is correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God got your underpants, and he's giving you a wedgie.
Okay, good. So look, today we're going to talk about the state of marriage in 2004.
Yes, let's do that. Mark, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Homosexuals are ruining our society.
Wait.
Unnatural.
Hey, look.
Unclean.
Look, actually, I was specifically referring to divorce. I think it's interesting that conservatives are making such a big deal about protecting marriage now, but in the past, they've never done anything to improve the conditions that really help marriage, namely educating people and reducing poverty.
Sure. I guess you think education and money will just solve everything.
Yes, I do, actually.
You see, here's the thing. Conservatives really didn't have much power back in the late 70s when homosexuality was invented.
Wait,
Reagan took office, the right-thinking straight white people in this country realized that marriage was under siege from these people in their neatly trimmed mustaches and tight-fitting polyester slacks, which is clearly forbidden in the Bible.
Okay,
Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Okay, I've heard that. That's a
never
hacky
Adam
one.
And Steve.
That's hacky, all right? Now, are you really saying that there weren't gay people until the late 70s?
Well, yes, Mark. It was caused by the jungle carnality of disco.
Wait, I don't understand.
Mark, I'm not an if-only kind of guy, but if we'd encourage ballroom dancing when we had the chance instead of the hustle and the bus stop, the moral landscape of this country would be very different today, promise you. Unfortunately, Gerald Ford, while I'm an admirable man in many ways, what's the word I'm looking for?
Moderate?
Exactly. He was a queer, an angry cop.
Wait. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. Look, let me make sure I understand. You claim that high divorce rates in the red states have nothing to do with pushing young, uneducated, poor kids into marriage they're not ready for, but instead are caused by homosexuality, and that it all could have been prevented if there had been no disco. Is that what you're saying, Paul?
No, Mark.
What are you saying? What are you saying? What's the matter now? That's it. Cry, you little baby.
I have platform shoes. I have a whole closet full of leisure suits and shiny shirts.
There you go.
I used to go to Plato's Retreat.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. I'm glad we got to this. This is what's at the core of it. We love you, and it's okay, buddy. Let it out, man. You still let it out. Yeah, that's it. There you go. There you go. Feel better?
We're saving marriage, Mark.
Oh,
join
my
us.
God.
A man, a woman, and Jesus. That's the marriage, my friend.
Thank you, Lawton. Thank
you. All right, buddy. You have a good Thanksgiving
you
now.
You too, buddy. It's
God
okay.
loves you.
I know
Deal
you
with
too.
It. Okay. Deal with it.
I'm trying.
Goodbye now.
Bye. Deal with it. All right, later today, that winner will be replaced with a new option on morningsedition.com, and a new vote will begin to select Thursday's winning Planet Bush report. So starting later today, you can go to morningsedition.com to cast a vote for your favorite report from Planet Bush, then tune in Thursday to hear the winner. Tune in, yeah, tune in Thursday to hear everything that we do here on Morning Sedition. That would be nice if you could do that. Now we have sort of, I think, kind of a sweet segment coming up. All right, because it exists for no other reason than for us to slander and abuse Robert Novak. Robert Novak, who I have grown to hate. And actually, after reading, you know, our guest David Margolis' column, or his piece, not a column, it was a piece in Vanity Fair, they wrote on Robert Novak, actually found him to be more sympathetic than I would like, because I used to, the only thing that made me feel good about seeing Robert Novak was picturing him sad and by himself in a bed looking at his dentures in a glass sitting on his bedstand. And now, you know, Robert Margolis, who's going to be on the phone here just in a second, has created this sort of, you know, full kind of in-depth little profile of this guy who I still can't stand, who is reprehensible, but now I can attach a personality to him at least beyond the character he plays on television. Good morning, Robert David Margolis.
Good morning.
Hey,
good morning,
Dave. Talking about Robert Novak, I was so relieved to know that not only was he a snotty only child, but he stunk and he was a slob.
Well, this is the way that his fraternity brothers remember him, and they remember him very vividly. As you can imagine, after 50 years, he's not the kind of guy you forget. He was very much the kind of guy we see on television now 50 years ago.
He's on CNN Crossfire, and is he on, what's the other show?
Well, he's on everything.
I mean, yeah, he is.
Everything on
CNN,
CNN, yeah.
He's just wall-to-wall Novak on American television.
Did you talk to anybody that couldn't stand the guy in college?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
That was what he always did, though. He's
and, you know, and he enjoys it. I mean, he still enjoys it. That's his shtick.
But
and, you know, if he heard that you hated him, nothing would please him more.
Well, what if he heard that that I liked him and I appreciated his approach towards Judaism?
Well, that's a complicated topic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, Robert Novak has been around for, it seems like, forever. He's had a syndicated column with the late Rowan Evans. He has managed over time to become this ubiquitous media personality. But the thing, David, that kind of struck me was something that was in your article that I have actually seen with my own two eyes. I've seen Robert Novak at two different events that I thought in a million years I'd never see him. One was at a party for Bill Bradley in Chicago at the DNC in 1996, and the other was at the White House, Bill Clinton's White House,
right?
When he was at a Christmas party, he was standing there with Cindy Adams. I mean, why do you think people who are so publicly in opposition seem privately to be able to get along?
Well, I think it's a compound of affection, fear, and Washington culture, in a way. I mean, for one thing, it's better to like to have Robert Novak like you than not like you, because Novak wields a lot of power. And I think that people, off the record, they genuinely like him. They find him to be a charming kind of rogue, and they enjoy him. And also, it's part of the Washington culture that, you know, when the cameras aren't rolling, everybody sort of gets along, and much of the antipathy is sort of for public consumption.
Now, Barney Frank says, the congressman from Massachusetts, Barney Frank, says that's part of what's wrong with Washington, that so many people who are diametrically opposed to Bob Novak philosophically hang out with the guy.
Well, I think that's right, and I appreciated Barney Frank's candor, but it was hard to find somebody to say that, because there are all kinds of other people, you know, whom you'd think would be very much opposed to Novak on everything, and they like him. They say that underneath all of the bluster, he's a nice guy.
Mm. David, when you finished this piece on Novak, what was your conclusion about why there are two journalists who are currently facing jail time over the Valerie Plame affair, but Robert Novak seemingly is walking around unscathed and untouched?
Well, no one knows the answer to that, and it's a very good question. My impression is that Novak probably spoke to the special prosecutor, and I would think with the permission of whomever gave him the story, and that's the reason that they haven't gone after him. Judy Miller and Matt Cooper wouldn't speak, and that's the reason that they're being sought after.
So let me ask you something, David Margolis. Let's analyze Novak, because I imagine, you know, I read the piece, but don't you think it's telling that this is a guy that was a practicing Jew for a lot of his life, right?
Right.
And
well, you know, he was never a practicing Jew.
All right, so he's like...
He was nominally Jewish. He was born Jewish. But he was never religious.
Okay, but like many of us, maybe he doesn't go to temple, but he's Jewish. And out of nowhere, how long ago is it that he decides to convert to Catholicism?
I think it was six 6 or 7 years ago.
Now, what does that tell you about him as a writer? What do you think it has any implications about his?
Well, personal? You know something, it's a very dangerous topic to analyze, and I'm not sure what it says. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a very, very private thing. And
all
I,
right.
You know, I know how many people react to that kind of thing viscerally. And I just tried to let him speak on it himself without making any kind of judgment about it.
And what did he say? I guess what I'm asking you is, do you think this is a self-hating person at the core of who he is?
You know, I mean, it's one theory to describe it, but, you know, I didn't probe too deeply into it.
Okay, what was the most...
But, you know, I mean, one interesting thing is that, I mean, you said before that you ended up liking him more as a result of the story, and that doesn't make me unhappy. When I spoke to him, he said, you know, I hear you're writing a hatchet job on me. And I said, it would be too easy to write a hatchet job on you, and it wouldn't break any new ground. And I tried very hard to write a three-dimensional profile of the guy.
The strange thing is that when you characterize him as basically, you know, on one side, he's a journalist that's been around for years that hasn't really compromised his ideological stance for as long as he's been around.
This was something that was very refreshing about him. You know, when you asked him about Bush, for instance, he really had nothing good to say about him. He said, well, he's better than most presidents, but that's not saying very much. There's something refreshingly candid about the guy. He's got contempt for everybody.
That's why I appreciate him as a comic and as, you know, a clown to some degree, is that I see a guy that's got an act and that really characterizes, he's sort of as much a clown as he is a journalist in my head.
Yeah, well, in any case, he certainly has an act and it's taken him a long ways, and he's had it for 60 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, David, what was his beef with the McLaughlin Group? That was where he cut his teeth on television, and apparently he left after a disagreement.
Well, I think that he was just, in a way, too big for the show. I mean, he was too big for John McLaughlin's purposes. He hogged too much airtime, and McLaughlin couldn't stand it, and they parted company over it.
Mm. Now, you said that he really didn't have all that much good to say about Bush, yet it seems as though at the root of the Valerie Plame situation, which was of course outing a CIA agent, allegedly because of some things that her husband, Joseph Wilson, who we've had on the air with us, said about the president's run-up to the war in Iraq. Was he carrying water for Bush there?
Well, I think he might have been carrying water for Bush, but he had a story. He had an exclusive. This is what he lives for. Somebody had whispered something to him, and he printed it. I mean, in some ways, it's not entirely ideological, and that's one of the interesting things about him, that he's 64 years old. He's still very much a power player in Washington, and people still call him with things. And he doesn't think much about it. He just prints them.
Right. We're talking to David Margolick. He's got a piece in this month's Vanity Fair on Robert Novak. Will you stay on the line with us? Because I want to hear a little bit about the Tucker Carlson, Robert Novak initial sort of, Novak initially snuffed him, and then he did something to really to garner Carlson's respect. And I'd like to talk about that when we come back. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air. MorningsEdition.com, Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're going to land this thing. It's a morning sedition. We're talking to David Margolick, whose recent piece in the new Vanity Fair has unfortunately humanized Robert Novak. You know, that's what it really is. Not that I like him anymore, but you humanized him, David.
Well, good. I'm happy to hear that.
What I want to know is, I'd like you to tell the story, because there's only one person I can't stand more than Robert Novak, and that's Tucker Carlson. And I don't mean to lump them together, but I really can't stand him, because I can't even look at him as an old guy. I can't even look at him as somebody that has the same sort of belligerent and well-grounded in, wrongful integrity that Robert Novak has. So tell me, I was very happy to read in your piece that Novak iced Tucker Carlson initially.
Yeah, well, and in fact, you must have been unhappy with the end of the story, that Carlson started to respect him more. But the story is that Novak, and I encountered this a little bit myself. Novak doesn't like young whippersnappers, and he doesn't like people he feels haven't paid their dues. And in Carlson's case, when Carlson first came on CNN, Novak felt that he was insufficiently green and insufficiently conservative, and he thought of him as kind of a snot-nosed, squishy conservative, and didn't like him,
yeah.
and sort of froze him out, and the two of them didn't get along well at all. And then there was this episode during the New Hampshire primary where somebody started hassling Novak during a taping of Crossfire,
mm-hmm.
and afterwards they went outside to get on the CNN bus, and the same guy who'd been hassling Novak in the restaurant where the show was being done sort of came up and shoved Novak, and Novak shoved him back and sent the guy sprawling. The guy was bigger than Novak was and 20 years younger than Novak. Novak's not been well. He had one broken hip at the time. He's since broken another one.
Mm.
And yet he started to put up his dukes and was ready to fight this guy.
Oh.
And this is what won over Tucker Carlson to Novak.
Tucker Carlson, who probably has never been in a fight in his life.
Well, he made that point. He was quite honest about that. And he said, people my age don't do this kind of thing.
Oh, he's such a wuss. Anyways, David Margolik, thank you, and shame on you for humanizing Robert Novak.
My pleasure talking to you guys.
Okay,
thanks, David.
You take care, David.
Bye-bye.
So that was kind of interesting there about Tucker Carlson. He's I can't – you know what? David Margolik, nice guy. Robert Novak didn't need to be humanized in my head. I didn't need to know that he was just this weird old man with an act.
Well, you know what? You just gave – you probably gave David his next assignment.
Yeah.
Humanize Tucker Carlson.
No. You can see the human in him. He is a little green. He can't hide his real heart, which is liberal. So we did let this – I didn't want to let this story fall through the cracks because we talked about it earlier. I don't want to mispronounce his name.
Kwaisi
Mfume.
Is running for the United States Senate. Now, he just stepped down at the end of last year as president of the NAACP, did a great job there, took it from a $3.2 million deficit into 8 years of a budget surplus, replenished the membership, the whole nine yards. He was a five-term congressman. He left Congress in 1996. He may not be the only African-American in the primary, ironically enough, Mark, because while Al Wynn, who represents parts of PG and Montgomery counties in Maryland, has decided he will not run, it may possibly be that Elijah Cummings, who succeeded Kwaisi Mfume in that West Baltimore seat in Maryland,
mm-hmm.
he may decide to run for the Senate. Right now, the pollsters and the pundits are saying the more white people who run in this Senate race in the primary side, the better it is for Kwaisi Mfume.
So, but now, why is this race so important?
Well, I mean, this is Paul Sarbanes' seat. The Democrats certainly need to retain that seat. And there is an outside possibility that Michael Steele, who is also African-American, the current lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland, who's a conservative, who's been carrying water for the likes of Karl Rove and Ken Mellman, that he may end up running against whoever wins the Democratic primary, which sets up the possibility of two black men running for the same seat like there was in Illinois last year.
A conservative and a liberal.
Yes.
And a liberal. Now, is that that's happened before?
Well, it happened with Barack Obama Alan Keyes.
Yeah, but that wasn't. I mean,
his name was on the ballot.
I know, but that was sort of a setup. That was like a last ditch effort.
Yeah. Well, Michael Steele might well make a credible candidate. Remember, Maryland elected its first Republican governor in 2002, first time in 36 years,
mm-hmm.
and Michael Steele came in on that wave. He's apparently proven pretty popular among black conservatives in Maryland, and there may be a few of them there.
Well, we'll see what happens. All right, there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here we go, folks. Write these down. These are your marching orders for today. One, demand to know why baseball players are paying so much for steroids when they can pay half as much in Canada. Two, since Mario Vasquez won't explain why he's quitting American Idol, find a way to blame it somehow on Dick Cheney. Three, have Clinton's lung scar tissue examined by Warren Commission. This can't have been an accident. The Warren Commission. Yeah, they're still around. Yeah, maybe Gerald Ford can help you out with that. Four, express solidarity with Hillary Swank after she was caught smuggling an apple and an orange to the New Zealand airport. Hollywood elites must be allowed to bring health food to any formerly oppressed British colony. 5. Today's phrase is drop it in the conversation. Damn right banning gay marriage is unconstitutional. Same-sex marriage is exactly what they had in mind when they wrote the Constitution. Have you ever seen that thing? No straight guy has handwriting like that. You don't think Franklin and Jefferson and Adams had a three-way? Come on! What planet have you been living on? Earth to sheeple! I'll be on Randy Rhodes today with Lewis Black, who will then be on our show tomorrow on the phone if I can't get him to get up and come in.
You'll get him to get up and come in. I know how you like to guilt people, Maron.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's been a lot of fun this morning.
It has been, Riley.
See you tomorrow.
Okay.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.